Space Agency has released videos of its first Mars rover as it's exploring the red planet's surface. The rover is named Jurong. It's now investigating a vast plain known as Utopia Planitia on Mars's northern hemisphere. The rover successfully landed on Mars in mid-May. It is studying the red planet's surface rocks and atmosphere. It also looks for signs of life, including any subsurface water or ice. The solar-powered Chinese robot weighs around 240 kilograms and has 6 wheels. China is the second country after the U.S. to operate a rover on Mars. A university in the Venezuelan capital Caracas has turned its roof into a garden and uses sustainable energy to light up its classes. The roof of Andres Bello Catholic University is covered with plants and 30 solar panels. The panels, along with a wind turbine, produce the 7,400 watts of electricity to illuminate that area and light 2 rooms in the building. The roof is now functioning as a self-sufficient and environmentally friendly open-air classroom. The proposal for the project was put forward by 2 students. The aim is to educate people about renewable energy and the threat of climate change.
A small New Hampshire town has been hit by a series of car break-ins over the last few weeks. People were shocked when they finally discovered the mischievous criminal. A large black bear has been identified as the bandit wreaking havoc in the town of Fulton. The naughty mammal was caught on camera as it got on its 2 hind legs and skillfully opened the door of a car. Police say the bear was most likely rummaging for food. Authorities have asked people to remove food from their cars to avoid enticing the troublesome animal. A Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soap she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Altiti makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the major ingredient for the soap she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow milks.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She sells them both to domestic and international customers.
If you're a car lover, this story is for you. Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Perde. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event are mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the 5-day rally.
German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a 3-minute trial. Aside from its 2-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500 meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter, it will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. Walking around the city with our shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5 kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
A Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched its devastating onslaught on Gaza in early May. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They use their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Braun has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise, therefore it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife. And then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
A video has gone viral showing animals at a U.S. zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pin. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. Might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital of Paris is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. But everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongkang village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Let's go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
An indictment of the Trump Organization could mark the first criminal charges to emerge from an investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney into Donald J. Trump and his business dealings. The Manhattan District Attorney's office has informed Donald J. Trump's lawyers that it is considering criminal charges against his family business, the Trump Organization, in connection with fringe benefits the company awarded a top executive, according to several people with knowledge of the matter. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists William K. Rashbaum, Ben Protas, and Jonah E. Bromwich. The piece is titled, Trump Organization Could Face Criminal Charges in District Attorney Inquiry. Indictment of the Trump Organization could mark the first criminal charges to emerge from an investigation by Manhattan District Attorney into Donald J. Trump and his business dealings. The Manhattan District Attorney's office has informed Donald J. Trump's lawyers that it is considering criminal charges against his family business, the Trump Organization, in connection with fringe benefits the company awarded a top executive, according to several people with knowledge of the matter. The prosecutors had been building a case for months against the executive, Alan H. Weisselberg, as part of an effort to pressure him to cooperate with a broader inquiry into Donald Trump's business dealings. But it was not previously known that the Trump Organization also might face charges. If the case moves ahead, the district attorney, Cyrus R. Vance Jr., could announce charges as soon as next week, the people said. Mr. Vance's prosecutors have been conducting the investigation along with lawyers from the office of the New York State Attorney General, Letitia James. Any indictment would be the first to emerge from the long-running investigation and would raise the startling prospect of a former president having to defend the company he founded and has run for decades against accusations of criminal behavior. Prosecutors recently have focused much of their investigation into the perks that Donald Trump and the company doled out to Mr. Weisselberg and other executives, including tens of thousands of dollars in private school tuition for one of Mr. Weisselberg's grandchildren, as well as rents on apartments and car leases. They are looking into whether those benefits were properly recorded in the company's ledgers and whether taxes were paid on them, the New York Times has reported. Donald Trump's lawyers met on Thursday, 24th of June, with senior prosecutors in the district attorney's office in hope of persuading them to abandon any plan to charge the company, according to several people familiar with the meeting. Such meetings are routine in white-collar criminal investigations, and it is unclear whether the prosecutors have made a final decision on whether to charge the Trump Organization, which has long denied any wrongdoing. In my more than 50 years of practice, never before have I seen a district attorney's office target a company over employee compensation or fringe benefits, said Ronald P. Fischetti, a personal lawyer for Donald Trump. It's ridiculous and outrageous. Several lawyers who specialize in tax rules have told the New York Times that it would be highly unusual to indict a company just for failing to pay taxes on fringe benefits. None of them could cite any recent example, noting that many companies provide their employees with benefits like company cars. Still, an indictment of Donald Trump's company could deal a blow to the former president, just as he has started to hold rallies and flirt with a return to politics. The Trump Organization is inseparable from Mr. Trump, acting as a corporate umbrella for a portfolio of hotels, golf clubs, and other real estate, most of which are branded with his name. It is unclear whether Donald Trump will ultimately face charges himself. The investigation, which began 3 years ago, has been wide-ranging, examining whether the Trump Organization manipulated the value of its properties to obtain favorable loans and tax benefits, people with knowledge of the matter have said. The inquiry is also examining the organization's statements to insurance companies about the value of various assets and any role that its employees, including Mr. Weisselberg, may have played in hush money payments to two women during the 2016 presidential campaign. Donald J. Trump has derided the investigation by Mr. Cyrus Vance Jr., a Democrat, as politically motivated witch hunt. He unsuccessfully tried to fight a subpoena from Mr. Vance's office seeking 8 years of his personal and corporate tax returns, a fight that twice reached the United States Supreme Court. A spokesman for the district attorney's office declined to comment on Friday. A lawyer for Mr. Weisselberg, Mary Mulligan, also declined to comment. A spokeswoman for the Trump Organization did not respond to a request for comment. The meeting on Thursday, 24th of June, between Mr. Trump's lawyers and the prosecutors, held on a video call and lasting more than an hour and a half, was arranged by Mr. Fischetti. The people familiar with the meeting said, Fischetti is a former law partner of Mark Pomerantz, a former federal prosecutor and defense lawyer whom the district attorney's office enlisted to help lead the inquiry into Donald Trump and his business. At least one representative of the New York Attorney General's office also attended the meeting, one of the people said. Letitia James's office has been conducting a civil inquiry into some of the same issues that the district attorney's office is examining, but joined Mr. Cyrus Vance's criminal investigation in recent weeks. In the coming days, Donald Trump's lawyers plan to continue to try to persuade prosecutors not to charge the company, according to a person briefed on the matter. Companies, even private ones, like the Trump Organization, are subject to criminal prosecution and can face fines and other penalties if they're found guilty. Charges also can threaten an organization's relationships with banks and business partners and cause lasting reputational damage. The indictments could increase pressure to cooperate on Mr. Weisselberg, who could seek to cut a deal with prosecutors to testify against Donald Trump in exchange for leniency. Mr. Weisselberg's intimate knowledge of the Trump Organization, he has worked at the company for decades and was one of the top executives when Donald Trump was in the White House, would make his corporation an enormous asset to investigators looking at all aspects of the company. Because of that, he has been a central focus of scrutiny in the district attorney's investigation, with particular attention paid to the benefits that he and his family have received. In general, those types of benefits are taxable, although there are some exceptions and the rules can be murky. Donald Trump depends heavily on Mr. Weisselberg, who has continued to work at the Trump Organization while under investigation. In his book, Think Like a Billionaire, Donald Trump credited Mr. Weisselberg for doing whatever was necessary to protect the bottom line. And few things grate at Donald Trump like the prospect of disloyalty. Close allies have turned on him in the past, including his former personal lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, whom Donald Trump has labeled a rat. Mr. Cohen, who pleaded guilty to federal charges related to hush money payments to two women, is cooperating with the Manhattan District Attorney's investigation. After pleading guilty, Mr. Cohen said that it was Mr. Weisselberg who had helped the Trump Organization to disguise the reimbursements that Mr. Cohen received for paying off one of the women. Mr. Weisselberg was not accused of any wrongdoing by federal prosecutors, and Donald Trump did not pardon him in his final days in office, though he was said to have considered doing so. A pardon would not have given Mr. Weisselberg immunity from state charges. After Mr. Cohen pleaded guilty in 2018, Donald Trump expressed confidence that Mr. Weisselberg had not turned on him. 100% he didn't, Donald Trump told reporters for Bloomberg News Agency. He added, he's a wonderful guy.
The subcontinent.
Hello,
Mehdi, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent. Our program aims to address important issues in the subcontinent which affect the governments, people, organizations, and the region as a whole. We will try to explain the issues, break down controversies surrounding them, and try to have some external perspectives from experts and people.
In this edition of The Subcontinent, we are going to talk about the fate of United States military in Afghanistan following the September 11 deadline for the complete withdrawal. Then we will explore the contingencies of the Biden administration to maintain its influence in the country and the region.
The Biden administration says the U.S. military forces are set to leave Afghanistan by the anniversary of the September 11 attacks, after 20 years of costly attrition warfare. However, many people doubt that the United States would leave the region for good, as it is using every trick of the game to stall its military withdrawal from Afghanistan. The Biden administration has postponed or revised the deadline a few times. It seems that the authorities in Washington are only trying to buy time, hoping a solution would pop up for the predicament the U.S. has created in Afghanistan, which might be spiraling out to the entire region.
The United States is bogged down in a quagmire of its own making, and with every move it only goes deeper. It knows its military presence in Afghanistan has been nothing but failure, but at this point, every possible scenario can lead to even bigger failures. It may manage to remove some troops, but the idea of no air support there means total desperation in case of a Taliban takeover. The Biden administration may be seeking a way to pull out of the accord and not out of the country. Biden may opt to cite Taliban violations or delays in peace talks with the Afghan government as justification for maintaining an indefinite military presence, or ask the Taliban for an extension of the withdrawal deadline. In any case, this means the escalations of war in Afghanistan. Moreover, the United States and its interventions seem to be among the forces behind the rise of another threat for Afghanistan, the resurgence of Takfiris, or the remnants of Daesh, as they are emboldened by U.S. open talks with Taliban and Washington's move to release thousands of terrorists from prison as part of their deal. The U.S.-Taliban talks in Qatar were meant to stop the violence in the country, but the bloodshed has been relentless as more terrorists are being recruited. The U.S. failing strategy for leaving the country is something terrorists are counting on.
No possible scenarios can be favorable for Washington. If it leaves Afghanistan for good, it loses its stand in the region after two decades of useless and costly occupation. Moreover, the U.S. has massive amounts of assets and military equipment in Afghanistan that may end up in the hands of terrorists following the pullout. Besides, Washington has no way to know if Taliban is keeping up with its commitments without the proper intelligence gathering operations. There is no victory in this war, as all future possibilities lead to different levels of defeat for Washington.
According to the deal signed between Washington and Taliban late in February 2020 in Qatar's Doha, the U.S. promised the complete withdrawal of all American and NATO troops from Afghanistan if Taliban prevents Al-Qaeda and other terrorist outfits from operating against the U.S. and its allies. Taliban also promised to engage in talks with the Afghan government and distance itself from Al-Qaeda. Now, after two decades of war with Taliban, Washington seems more and more dependent on the group's approval for any future actions in Afghanistan. And the group, which seems to have the upper hand after 20 years of war against the U.S., has not accepted any of Washington's proposed mechanisms for the future of U.S. forces. Therefore, the U.S. will have to either find ways to linger its presence in the country or find alternatives that are less costly.
The U.S. invaded Afghanistan in the name of war on terror, ostensibly to bring peace and stability, to promote social security and education for women. In other words, to curb terrorism and influence of Taliban over the nation. It has achieved almost none of its important promulgated goals. I mean the ones that really matter for the country and its people, not just a few trophy operations.
The United States is moving most of its forces to nearby countries or even further countries. The US and probably many others in this case fear that Taliban wants to take absolute control in Kabul and will take actions as soon as the US pullout paves the way. However, many people, including some inside Taliban's ruling circles, want assurance that the US won't return its troops after a period of strategic replacement around the continent. If the United States wants to continue its airstrikes or other so-called counter-terrorism operation in the region following the supposed withdrawal from Afghanistan, it needs to be close, so all the neighbors of Afghanistan and other regional countries can be viable destinations. The United States has numerous military bases throughout the world. Biden administration might be looking for some alternatives to keep the U.S. foothold in the region, to provide security for the U.S. interests and gather intelligence, and in general, to maintain its military leverage for any future developments in Afghanistan, the U.S. needs to remain its forces close by.
Washington has no leverage against Taliban. It has no way to guarantee Taliban would not move to gain control over the country. Nobody is sure of Afghan security forces' capability to counter the increasing terrorist attacks in the country. Also, there is nothing to ensure that Kabul can survive the resurgence of Takfiri terrorists in the region. The authorities and the American military are negotiating with the nations surrounding Afghanistan on agreements to base troops and aircraft for operations inside the country following the withdrawal. But the U.S. plans to maintain its military foothold in the region are being nullified one after the other.
One of Washington's plans was to use Pakistan as a base for its air operations, which is rejected by the Pakistani government. Islamabad's cooperation with Washington has the potential to affect the U.S.-Taliban negotiations in particular and the future of the U.S. in the region in general. However, most people believe that Islamabad is unlikely to sign off on any U.S. strikes against the Taliban that are launched from a base in Pakistan. NATO officials have also approached Qatar seeking access to one of its military bases for much-needed training of Afghan special forces. Qatar has not responded to the request yet. The U.S. is also considering other Asian countries as its contingency plan in case it would need its drones over Afghanistan. Some of them seem more favorable or plausible than others, such as Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan.
There has been some talk, for instance, that Uzbekistan may cooperate, not necessarily regarding bases for unmanned aircraft systems, UAS, for drones, but there has been an increase in the level of cooperation between Uzbekistan and the U.S. since, I believe, 2016. So it might be. Of course, the Russians wouldn't be happy. They consider Central Asia like their backyard, and the Chinese wouldn't be happy either. They don't like the fact that there would be a U.S. and NATO presence in Central Asia, especially well with U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan, but there might be an option. Perhaps a less likely option would be Tajikistan, but there has been some cooperation in the military area, security, border security area between the United States and Tajikistan, although the Russians have a military base protecting the border of Tajikistan with Afghanistan. So perhaps wouldn't be the idea, there won't be, might not crystallize or might not become reality, the idea of a military presence, U.S. military presence in Tajikistan. Might it be, could it be in Uzbekistan? Maybe, maybe not. Pakistan, well, the Pakistanis say no, but they could change their mind too. There could be some trade-offs, some negotiations between the U.S. I don't think it's the last word. And there might be that in the end, the U.S. might have bases or a base in Pakistan, perhaps even a secret one, non-official. It's not one that would exist, but it will be there like it happened before with the CIA unmanned aircraft systems, the Predators, the Reapers, I believe, too. Another option might be, but then again, it will require permission for airspace travel, etc. It just occurs to me. Azerbaijan, maybe. Would it be Azerbaijan, a base?
Another plausible contingency was using Turkey as something in between, because it is a NATO member and also a Muslim country. Moreover, Ankara really needs to mend its ties with Washington after its acquisition of the Russian S-400 missile defense system. Turkey has long provided security at Kabul's airport and has offered to continue doing so, but this scenario was also nipped in the bud. Taliban says it would not accept the idea of keeping the Turkish forces in the country following the withdrawal.
The Taliban wouldn't accept the idea of Turkish troops remaining in Afghanistan to keep some sort of security. Like, for instance, the Turks have been responsible with 500 soldiers. They have been responsible for the security of Kabul International Airport. But the thing is that the Taliban see any foreign troop as what they are, foreigners, foreign occupying force. It doesn't matter that Turkey is Muslim. It doesn't matter that they are Sunni Muslim, like the Taliban and the Pashtuns in Afghanistan are Sunni Muslims. It doesn't matter to the Taliban. They are foreigners. They are invaders to them. So they got to go. And that's as simple as that. I mean, there is no other way to try to find a compromise for the Taliban. They are uncompromising on that. No foreigners on Afghan soil, and I suppose it's because they see the situation that it got to be as it was in 2001 before the U.S. intervened. No foreigners there.
You're listening to the Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to the Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Major David McBride, a former Australian Army legal officer who completed two deployments to Afghanistan as part of International Security Assistance Force. First of all, I would like to thank Mr. McBride for being on the program and begin by asking why the Biden administration keeps postponing the U.S. military withdrawal from Afghanistan.
I think that they can see it's going to be bad for them politically. It's not their fault. This is a bad debt that was created by George W. Bush 20 years ago. I believe the only reason they invaded Afghanistan was to get popularity domestically and to win the 2004 election. And now it has been seen to be a long-term failure. And the problem that President Biden has is that when he withdraws, there will almost certainly be chaos in the country. And that will be laid at his feet rather than where it properly should be laid at the previous administrations.
To maintain its military leverage for any future developments in Afghanistan, the U.S. is moving most of its forces to nearby countries like Pakistan, for example. Now, how can Islamabad's cooperation with Washington affect the U.S.-Taliban negotiations in particular and the future of the U.S. and the region in general?
Yes, it's a good question. The role of Pakistan in Afghanistan is very unclear, but the one thing which is certain is that they do not play with a straight deck. Duplicity is part of their game in Afghanistan. One of the problems or worries that Pakistan has is that the Indians or even the Chinese, the two countries on their other borders, might gain a foothold in Afghanistan by offering the Afghans aid and assistance in rebuilding their nation. And that worries the Pakistanis. There was no doubt, it shows you what a complicated game Pakistan plays. And even though they were fighting what is called the Pakistani Taliban for many years in quite a bit of fight, they were sponsoring the Afghan Taliban, even though the two organizations were not that different, because they wanted to be able to control the Afghan Taliban and therefore control Afghanistan. Now, they will not want to be seen, like every government wants, in order to win popular support, you need to make a section of the public think that you are strong. And if whatever they deals they do behind closed doors, the Pakistan government does not want to be seen to be completely beholden to America. They do a lot of rallying to the Pakistani national cause. This is bad if it looks like they've just become an American vassal state, staging base. So they don't want the American forces being based there. And they have also got very strong links to the Taliban. And they probably are not negotiating with the Taliban with the Americans, and they're not going to reveal their links. I think it's a good thing that the Pakistanis do not want the American bases there.
Thank you, Mr. McBride. And before asking the next set of questions, let's take a look at the issue of U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan through the lens of global media outlets.
The Biden administration is struggling to articulate how it will keep Afghanistan from falling to the Taliban after American forces depart, even as the U.S. is more than halfway through its troop withdrawal. The Pentagon's top brass have insisted the U.S. military will conduct operations launched from outside the country if needed, but they've offered few details on logistics such as where those troops would be based. U.S. air support has already risen in recent weeks to counter the Taliban's offensives. The insurgents have already seized several districts and overrun Afghan military bases. The Taliban have overrun nearly 40 districts across the country in the past month. Out of 387 districts in Afghanistan, the fighting is ongoing in 116 districts in the country. In a statement about hosting U.S. military bases, the Taliban said, "We are asking neighboring countries not to provide such an opportunity or allow such a move. If, God forbid, still someone allows this, this will be a historic mistake and ignominy." It described the presence of U.S.-led foreign forces in Afghanistan as the fundamental reason for regional insecurity and war, adding that the group would not remain silent against such a heinous and provocative act.
Now Washington has to coordinate with Taliban for any future moves, and Taliban doesn't seem to be cooperating. And the proof is the rise of terrorist attacks. Will the U.S. find a way to prolong this stay, or will it leave the country to a more powerful and resourceful Taliban?
Well, we don't know the answer to that question. It'll be one of the two, and it's both they're both depressing. There is no doubt about it. While the U.S. will try to paint the Taliban as the bad guy in this situation, as you suggested, the U.S. Under President Trump gave the order to withdraw all forces by the end of 2020. Now, that didn't happen, and the military pushed back and said, oh, this is too hard. Now, that's not their role, and actually, the Americans had very much the ability. The one thing they are really good at is logistics, and they could have taken everybody out in 2020. Now, then they said May 2021, and they didn't meet that deadline either, and they put it off to September. So they received a text after they failed to keep their word about the deadlines. Now, the Taliban can rightly argue the Americans are the ones that broke their word, and of course we attacked when you didn't keep your word, and that's a warning to you that if you don't keep your word in September, we'll attack more. I think that the date of the 11th of September was a very curious and strange choice. There will obviously be attacks on that anniversary anyway. And the Americans, you're right, one possibility is that they will use the attacks on 11th September or thereabouts to keep their forces there. It's a bit of a phony withdrawal.
Mr. McBride, the U.S. invaded Afghanistan ostensibly to bring peace and stability. In other words, to curb terrorism and influence of Taliban. Now, do you think it achieved any of its objectives?
No, they didn't. And as you said, they've made the Taliban resurgent and different. The Taliban, so-called Taliban now, are quite different to the amateur band of believers who took over the country in 1996. It is now a different organization, and the Americans have created that. And yes, they've made them stronger. And in the same way that Americans use enemies, like China or Russia, to build their own strength domestically, the Taliban have been able to do that as well, and they've made themselves stronger by the Americans. The two organizations have more in common than they'd like to admit. So they've definitely given the country, the Taliban will be in control. They have made them stronger. So they haven't improved the life. It's a lie for the Americans to say they were there to help women and children. If they really wanted to help women and children, they shouldn't have fought the Soviet invasion. Apparently, more girls were in school during the years after the Soviet invasion than they've ever been since. But the Americans couldn't handle the Soviets being there, so they fought a proxy war with these hardline Islamic tribesmen, and schooling has never been a thing in Afghanistan since. But that's the Americans' fault as much as anybody else.
Mr. McBride, thank you for your precious time. And now let's see how the people have reacted on social media and cyberspace.
Samira Hamidi has expressed hope about the agreement for the U.S. withdrawal would be implemented on the ground, but she says she is aware of the U.S. earliest dirty games on similar circumstances. Mehr Tarar has hailed Pakistan's Premier Khan for his firm response about the possibility of U.S. bases in the Pakistani territory. James Gordon Meek believes the day American forces leave Afghanistan is the real Independence Day for the people of Afghanistan. Michael Tackett has reiterated the remarks by former President Karzai, pointing out that extremism is at its highest point and the United States is leaving behind a disaster. Sushant Sarin has voiced his concern about the possibility of a takeover by Taliban, questioning the U.S. logic or fake hope that it can have some sort of control over Taliban's activities in Afghanistan from a base in Pakistan.
And that was our episode about the U.S. quandary in Afghanistan and its contingencies for future scenarios. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
According to the latest U.S. drought monitor, nearly 91% of the U.S. western region is in some level of drought, affecting over 58 million people. That includes nearly 56% of the region being in extreme or exceptional drought, the monitor's most severe classifications. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Andrea Germanus Ryder. This article is published under the heading, As Temps Soar, Over 90% of Western U.S. Gripped by Drought. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Over 90% of the U.S. West is currently experiencing drought, federal authorities said recently amid warnings of unprecedented and dangerous heat heading to the Pacific Northwest and fresh declarations that humanity is in the midst of a climate emergency. According to the latest U.S. drought monitor, nearly 91% of the western region is in some level of drought, affecting over 58 million people. That includes nearly 56% of the region being in extreme or exceptional drought, the monitor's most severe classifications. The West has never seen a drought like this, especially so early in the dry season, tweeted meteorologist and author Eric Haltus, sharing a post from climate journalist Brian Kahn. We are in a climate emergency. The monitor described a worsening crisis. The drought situation in the western United States continued to worsen after another mostly hot and dry week. A few areas of drought in south central and southeast New Mexico saw some slight improvement due to effects from several rain and thunderstorm events in the last month. Unfortunately, widespread severe or worse drought continued in New Mexico, and conditions remained the same or worsened elsewhere. Increases in moderate, severe, extreme, and in a few cases, exceptional drought coverage occurred in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and Montana. Severe drought also expanded in western Idaho. Wildfires and increasing wildlife danger, water restrictions, and damage to agriculture are very common across the West region. As far as drought goes, this is the big one, especially if we are talking about the broader drought across the whole Southwest. Daniel Swain, a climate scientist at the University of California, Los Angeles, told Bloomberg, adding, by a lot of metrics, it is the most severe drought on record.